I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guests today are Kate Harris and Bev Jackson. Kate's a lifelong feminist and lesbian campaigner. She worked at Brighton Women's Aid, a refuge for women fleeing domestic abuse, in the 1970s and continued her activism when she moved into the corporate sector. This included American Express, where Kate worked as Vice President Global Relationship Management, Corporate Services. Kate was an active supporter of Europe's largest gay rights organization named Stonewall. She organized Amex sponsorship for major Stonewall events and served as a personal capacity as a Stonewall ambassador. And then Bev Jackson was a founding member of the UK Gay Liberation Front in 1970. She's a lifelong progressive activist in causes including anti-apartheid and women's and refugee rights. In 2016, she published a book, A Month with Starfish, on her experience working with refugees in Greece. Bev worked as a teacher and then a lecturer in English literature at the University of Amsterdam and later became an academic translator. She lives in the Netherlands. Together, they were introduced to each other in 2019 by a mutual acquaintance who saw they shared similar concerns about Stonewall's abandonment of gay and lesbian rights. Both had separately communicated their concerns to Stonewall, but there was no willingness to engage. In the summer of 2019, they therefore decided to team up and revive the gay rights movement in the form of a new organization, LGB Alliance. So first off, thank you for your work in the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
Well, thank you for having us, Derek. Really happy to be here.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Derek.
So what is LGB Alliance and what's its history and what's its present situation?
Shall I start, Bev?
Yeah, you start.
Okay. We think that we're probably the only gay rights and bisexual rights organization in the world that rejects what we call gender identity theory. And basically what that means is that we believe that biological sex is real. There are two sexes. You can't change sex. And last of all, you should not be telling any child that they may have been born in the wrong body. So we basically exist to fight back against the idea that there is any such thing as an LGBTQIA plus community. No such thing exists. We also stand up for freedom of speech, because one of the characteristics of the LGBTQIA plus campaigning is that no dissent is allowed. So I'd say that we're campaigners for the values of the Enlightenment, which is reason, science, informed dialogue, and plenty of disagreement, because we think that disagreement leads to better thinking and better policy making. But we're all about evidence. Everything that we do is fact-based. We don't believe in...
You've missed out the part about how we got going. So I'm going to tell that story then about why we started. We were both very upset at what was happening with Stonewall, because in embracing gender identity, it had in fact completely abandoned the interests of lesbians and gay men. It refused to accept that. So, I mean, once you say gender identity matters, and everybody's got one of these things, this gender identity, and it matters more than sex, you know, if you follow that to its extreme, then two men who both say they're women can be a lesbian couple. I mean, and this is complete nonsense. And it was really lesbians from the beginning. It was the lesbians who suffered from this incorporation of gender identity, which is symbolized by this T, into that movement. And so what was the gay rights movement gradually became the gay rights plus transgender movement, and then it became the gay rights plus gender identity movement, and now it is simply the gender identity movement. Gay rights has disappeared from what was once the gay rights movement. It has disappeared. Moreover, all those organizations which call themselves LGBTQIA plus, two-spirit, what have you, actually oppose gay rights. It sounds so crazy that when you say it, people think, nah, you're exaggerating. That can't possibly be true. But it is true, because there are competing rights. If lesbians want a dating site where there's only lesbians, and male people come along who say, but I'm a lesbian, then they have a right, they believe, they claim the right to be on that dating site and to hit on young lesbians. And mostly they can just reject them and that will not be a huge issue. But sometimes it goes wrong. Some of these people are aggressive, unpleasant. When they're rejected, they don't like. This is just one example of when rights compete and conflict.
Yeah, and I think for us, one of the biggest drivers is what's happening to children in this topsy-turvy world, because a whole sort of set of ideas has been introduced. It's global. It's not just the UK and the US and Canada. It's Brazil, it's Mexico, it's Asia, it's Australia, New Zealand. It is everywhere. And if we have time, we can maybe look at that. But I think our fundamental belief is that nobody has asked us if it's okay to erase women and erase lesbians, gays and bisexuals from society and to tell children who are gender nonconforming that they need a lifetime of medication and, in fact, they shouldn't be allowed to go through puberty. Nobody's asked us. So as far as I know, no country in the world has had a democratic vote on whether we think this ideology is helpful. We think it's deeply regressive. We think it takes us back 50 years more for gay rights. I mean, we've never been as constrained as lesbians, gays, and bisexuals as we are today.
Well, that is really true. Right? You look back at the 1970s, and I remember, you know, that in the 1970s, there would be men who would say, I feel like a lesbian inside. And it was a kind of stupid joke. It wasn't funny, but it was a stupid joke. And now those same men who in the 70s were saying, I feel like a lesbian inside, are saying, I am a lesbian. And you've got to, you know, don't you tell me I'm not a lesbian. You've got no right to tell me who I am. I know who I am. That's my identity. And this whole identity-based movement has corrupted our entire gay rights movement. And it's engulfed it. And we're trying to reclaim it bit by bit. When we started in 2019, we started by phoning 70 people that we thought were on our side because we had seen what they'd been writing in Twitter and in social media in general. We thought, okay, this person seems to agree with us. And we phoned up each one individually and we booked a little hall and we got four security in case the address leaked out. And we just had a meeting. And it was just the two of us organizing this. We spent several months organizing it. We had no money. We had no backing. We had nothing at all other than our conviction, Kate's conviction and my conviction, that something had gone terribly wrong with the gay rights movement. And if nobody was going to put it right, well, I guess we had to. We assumed after that meeting that others would take over, younger people, more energetic people. But the truth was, they didn't. We did 80% of the work for the first year and a half of, impossible. It's true.
Just before we leave that, Derek, can I just tell you a little bit about that meeting and what it was like?
Well, I want to say one thing, which is I want to focus in on, you said we had security in case people found out where the meeting was. And I just want to reflect for a moment on the horror of that statement itself. Because if I were going to have a meeting to begin a new organization that advocates for the right of coho salmon or for the rights of timber wolves or for the rights of redwood tree, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. I would not have to keep the location secret. And what you said, listeners may not know that this precaution is both absolutely necessary and absolutely standard at this point. So maybe this is where you were going and I should just shut up, but can you talk for a moment, and don't forget the thing you were going to say, but can you talk for just a moment about what that says about society and the other side, that these meetings have to be kept secret or women will be assaulted?
At the moment, saying that there are only two sexes is the most dangerous thing you can say in society. It is worse than anything you can say about Israel and Hamas. It is worse than any other statement, any other conflict in the world. This is it. And I mean, I know that from a filmmaker who made an actual film about, and he said it was easier to talk to IDF and Hamas than it was to talk to people who were defending, who defended child transition, pediatric transition. This is the most dangerous subject in the world. And the reason that we dared to do it is we're old enough, we're financially secure, we cannot be cancelled. I've got a little pension. We're not. Yeah. You cannot fire us.
Let's talk about the fear as well. I think Derek's hitting on a really good point, because for 3 years before we even started LGB Alliance, I had been talking to Stonewall. And for any listeners who don't know about Stonewall, there used to be a fantastic gay rights organization that led political change in this country, helped us get civil partnership, rights to services without discrimination, military equality, right to adoption, everything that you could possibly want. And then Stonewall went absolutely crazy in 2015, got a big grant from the Arcus Foundation specifically to turn towards trans issues. Now, I, as he said in the intro, I'd been a massive supporter of Stonewall when it used to be fact-based, evidence-based, and a reliable policy partner for government. Once it decided to adopt gender identity theory, I started meeting with lots of former supporters and trustees of Stonewall to try to talk to the current Stonewall managers and trustees. They've tried to approach them independently. But people listening need to know that a key part of gender identity theory, or whatever you want to call it, a key element of it is that you must not discuss any of the ideas. And we tried, as I say, for 3 years, writing backwards and forwards, please talk, please talk, please talk. And because they would not, that is why we formed LGB Alliance. And we wrote to them and said, we will have to form a new organization unless we talk. And they still refused. So we formed a new organization. But the point about the fear, Derek, is I think that is the how you enforce no debate. So the minute that LGB Alliance had our secret meeting, and it was fabulous because we did have security and we didn't need it, because every single person who came to that meeting kept the pledge to keep it secret. So we were so lucky. But every other meeting that women's groups have has been picketed noisily. We can talk about that in more detail in a minute. But what I want to say is that they want to put the fear of God into you, because you are shining a spotlight on a set of ideas that has no intellectual and no moral basis. And once somebody stands up and says, the emperor has no clothes, then they start calling you names. And we've found this over and over again. They will not engage in the, we're happy to discuss. We're happy to talk. We're happy to talk to anybody in a constructive way about ideas, beliefs, opinions. But they hate discussion. They hate it. Their motto is no debate. So the night that we formed, and Alison Bailey launched us, with a tweet that went viral that said, LGB Alliance is here and watch out world. And suddenly, bang, we got the most amazing number of messages. Lots from the US, lots from Canada, lots from South America. Actually, every single continent, we had lots of supportive messages saying, thank God somebody is standing up to this. Who are gay, lesbian, etc.
And the funny thing was that they assumed, because we'd been announced, that we were a fully fledged organization. And so we would get messages like, when are you starting up in New Zealand? And, oh, we really need you in Portugal. And I mean, it was the two of us with this meeting, and we had no structure, no money, nothing. And it was clear that the need was huge. And
Bev, I'll hand over the microphone to you in a minute, but I just want to just finish that point by saying the hate was instantaneous. We had not written a single word. We hadn't been on the radio, the television. We had nothing. And as soon as Alison tweeted, we got this barrage of lunatics telling us, you're a hate group, you're fascists, you're funded by the far right, you're all straight men. Ooh, heaven forfend. You know, it was just, you know, continuous violent threats. We had fake websites, fake Twitter accounts.
And for most of all, from the very first day, Christine Burns, quite a prominent trans rights activist, said, LGB Alliance is a hate group, pass it on. And they did pass it on. And we became known as a hate group within 24 hours, having done nothing at all except for having a meeting. At that meeting, by the way, the speakers were Kate and myself and a gay man who was a former founder of Stonewall, and Miranda Yardley, who is a trans woman, or actually I think Miranda now considers himself to be a gay man again, but anyway, is a trans person. And we have always been open to talking to people, but what we were inundated by, on the one hand, by all these messages of thanks and support, and on the other hand, by these incredible messages of really quite obscene, some of them messages saying that we were hateful and that we had to be abolished immediately before we'd begun. They tried every possible means to squash us before we could get going. They stopped our funding. They stopped us getting on mainstream media. There were constant complaints to anybody who would host us, anybody who would have anything to do with us, got a barrage of insults of, wait a minute, you're talking to LGB Alliance? No, you can't. And that, I mean, you cannot imagine. Would they have tried every single possible thing to crush us from day one?
But this isn't specific to us. I mean, to be absolutely honest, we were scared for our lives for many, many, particularly women, lesbians, are on the receiving end of such violent threats. But look at, and I'm going to pronounce her name wrong, Sean Theory in Texas. Is that how you pronounce it? Theery?
Are you aware of her, Derek? She's a Democrat in Texas, and when very Texas put forward its legislation, because obviously Republicans can control there, put through legislation to ban pediatric transition, she, as a lone Democrat, stood up and gave an unbelievably emotional and heartfelt and very well-informed speech explaining why she was supporting the Republican proposal to ban pediatric transition in Texas. Now, she has no support from her own party. I've seen, you know, vile suggestions about her, and she's since been primaried. I don't know what her position is now, whether she can hold on or not. But
this is what we're talking about. Because there is no intellectual or moral basis to harming children, which is at the root of this whole thing, the only weapons they have are making us frightened to speak.
I just want to say, when Kate says they, when we say they, we are not talking about trans people. I want that to be absolutely clear. We're talking, and it's really important, because I've met more wonderful trans people in the last 3 years than in the rest of my life. People who agree with us and are absolutely horrified by the people that are supposedly standing up for what they call trans rights, which is not trans rights. It's about self-identification, and it doesn't have to do with that at all. I just wanted to make that absolutely clear, and now I've completely lost my thread. So what was I saying, Kate?
You were saying that when we say they.
Yes. that it's really important that what we're talking about is gender identity campaigners. And they're mostly, I have to say, men and women, many of them, most of them, I think, not trans at all, but who believe very strongly, who either believe or feel they must say they believe. I'm really not quite sure if they really believe these things, but are absolutely fierce. They present gender identity and self-ID as a civil rights struggle, as if now we've got gay rights, okay, that's okay. Now we go on to the next civil rights struggle, which is trans rights. Nothing could be further from the truth. It is not a civil rights struggle, not in any way at all. What it is the imposition. It's a kind of social engineering, an attempt by using funny language like gender affirming healthcare and inclusivity, words which have lost their original meaning, to impose queer theory on society. You know all about that. In a wave of social engineering, and by instilling fear into people if they disagree with it. That's what this is about, and it is as far from civil rights as you can possibly imagine.
So there was recently a demonstration of women in Philadelphia, where the women were standing and holding banners for women's only spaces, and they were among those who were attempting to assault them, and in one case assaulting them, were a bunch of men all dressed in black and with their faces covered. And we either can or can't go there, depending on what you want to do. But I don't understand how people don't see, as men are forcing their way into women's sports, into women's spaces, and you haven't really talked about lesbians being called bigots if they don't want to have sex with men, but you can certainly say something about that if you want. I don't understand how this is not seen as a men's rights movement, b, a backlash against the very real gains made by women's rights and gay and lesbian rights over the past 50 years. And I want to say one more thing, which is my father was abusive, and my parents got divorced in the very early 70s. And at that point, divorced women could not get credit cards in their own names. And so there are very real gains that have been made over the past 60 years. And one of the reasons my mother didn't leave my father is because there weren't really bad women's shelters in the United States in the 1950s and 60s. So there have been gains made, and you can disagree with this if you want, but I see a lot of this as a men's rights movement, b, a backlash against the gains that have been made by women, and c, a backlash against the gains that have been made by gays and lesbians. So do you agree or disagree? And
partly, of course, very much so. And I think every real feminist sees this as the most misogynistic era of our lifetime. It's really quite frightening, the amount of misogyny we see. But if you look, when you describe it as a men's rights movement, you're really looking at the position of, let's say, MTF, so male to female people who tend to be adults and who are claiming rights to women's spaces. And our concern is obviously partly that, but that's very much a women's issue. From the LGB angle, we're more concerned with what you said earlier about the lesbians who are being called bigots for not wanting to accept that some lesbians have penises. I mean, the idea that some lesbians have penises is so bizarre. Again, when you say these bizarre things, people look at you and you think, ah, come on, you're exaggerating. Why are you saying these silly things? They do not realize the extent to which the entire movement that we once used to be proud of has been completely, I don't know what the right word is. What's the right word, Kate? I run out of words here.
Well, I think I agree with everything you suggest, Derek. I think, every time, I don't know if people are familiar with Douglas Murray, who's quite often on TV in the US, Andrew Neil, who's a very high profile sort of news presenter and commentator over here, has just both Douglas is gay, and he's been speaking up about this issue for years and never gets attacked. Andrew Neil has just identified himself as a TERF. Do you know what a TERF is, Derek?
Yes, but go ahead and say it for listeners.
Yeah, it's a name that we're called by those who dislike us very much, trans-exclusionary radical feminist. So we've all adopted that, and in fact, we now call the United Kingdom TERF Island with great.
Well, let's just make it clear. First of all, we're not trans-exclusionary. This is about male exclusionary from female spaces. And we're not all radical feminists. I'm not a radical feminist. So, and it was originally a term of abuse, and it's been kind of adopted now as, okay, joke. You want to call us TERFs? Let's call us, we'll adopt that. Yes.
Yeah. So it's now used by all of those who oppose the gender identity nonsense and the medicalization of children. Mostly call ourselves TERFs, even though it's, Bev takes lots of things literally.
Well, I'm just trying to explain for the listeners. If Dave Chappelle says, I'm team TERF, that's what he means. He's on our side, but it was originally a term of abuse. I just want to make things clear, though.
Right. So the point I'm making, Derek, is that Andrew Neil, who's the latest to identify as a TERF in the United Kingdom, has been hugely welcomed because even though he's late to understanding what's going on, he watched that incredible testimony by Chloe Cole last week, which has caused huge publicity here. I'm sure it has in the US. The girl who had the double mastectomy at 15.
She testified to Congress. You've seen it, Derek?
I know about her, but listeners might not. So you might give some background.
So she testified very emotionally to Congress about the fact that she, at 13, had been distressed by her puberty, distressed by unwanted attention from men, distressed by the whole, by growing into a woman, and that she told her parents that she was trans or she was a boy, and they sent her to a clinic, and she immediately got put on puberty blockers, and she soon had cross-sex hormones, mastectomy at 15, was it 15? 15, and now she's 19 and totally regrets all of it, and is really, she's furious that this was done to her when she was so young and just confused and just needed some help and support and counseling. But she is also an incredibly brave young woman who wants to stop this happening to other girls. This is about girls.
One of the main points that you've left out, which I shall handily add in, is that the doctors said to her parents, would you rather have a dead daughter or a living son?
Yeah.
Now, this is one of the most vicious and evil arguments used by any doctor, any adult, any clinician, anybody, anywhere, because it's utterly, utterly fictitious. This has become a saying that is used, which is based on, again, zero evidence. There is zero evidence about this. And it's terribly irresponsible for anybody to talk about suicide of children or young adults with any mental health disorders. But to threaten parents with that continues. We know it continues day by day by day in this country and from Chloe's testimony in the US. And one of the main jobs that we need to do is to debunk that and to say, as most more and more countries in Europe are now saying, we will not give puberty blockers to any child, because every child, look at a baby, it's born, it goes through childhood, it goes through puberty, it then becomes an adult. Who are we? Who are we? Regardless of this whole movement of gender identity, who are we to disrupt that process of allowing a young person to grow into an adult? And yet parents are being emotionally terrorized. I think what's going on across the globe, I mean, this isn't actually a trans issue, Derek, but I think what's going on is there's a collective howl from young women throughout the world about the expectations that are being put on them by this porn-soaked society that we live in. And the collective howl should be responded to in an adult way, with therapy, with thinking, with talking, not with surgery. I mean, we saw, I was an inpatient in a mental hospital a few years ago for a month, and I was doing therapy with lots and lots of very bright girls, many of them university, and the arms were covered in scars. And the point of the psychotherapy that they were doing there was to stop them self-harming. And I think this is a continuation of the same thing, that being a young girl today is it's not a trans issue. It's an issue about growing up a girl, and particularly a gender non-conforming girl. Because
and what is gender non-conforming? It's such a crazy phrase. Anyway, it's such a sexist idea, gender non-conforming, isn't it? It's a crazy thing, don't you think? I mean, well, should we even use that phrase, gender non-conforming? What do we mean, non-conforming, not conforming to stereotypes that we rejected 50 years ago?
But we're encouraging people to harm themselves. And the big question for me is, why is it that young people are going through all this surgery and lifelong medication and all the male to female transitioners who've been married, had children, had successful careers, who then come out and say they're women? None of them have surgery. None of them have any medical treatment. So I think there's loads of questions that we've got to ask about just what is going on and why is the medical profession breaking its fundamental rule, do no harm?
Yeah, because I absolutely agree. And there are so many lies told. It is a lie to say that anybody can be born in the wrong body. I mean, it is just completely false. You cannot be born in the wrong body. But if you believe that, if people who believe that think, oh, you evil people, these poor children who've been born in the wrong body, and you want to prevent them getting the drugs and surgery they need. So that's the first lie. The second lie is they'll commit suicide if you don't do it. It is, as Kate said, completely false. So these lies upon lies upon lies, they can have puberty blockers. Puberty blockers just give them time to think. No, they don't. No, they are not harmless. No, they are not reversible. They lead to cross-sex hormones. That's another lie. And the lies just go on and on and on. And because, as Kate said, you're not allowed to talk about it, the public hears the lies and does not hear the discussion about, where's the evidence for this? Excuse me, you're saying this. What is it based on? And you can follow arguments on Twitter, for instance, between somebody called Jack Turban, who keeps saying, oh, but all the medical associations say this and that, and someone called Leo Sapir, who points out that the evidence is, which is now being gathered in Europe, points to the fact that that this pediatric transition has no evidence base at all. And that the American associations, he says, are just not medical associations, are not listening to the facts. So it's just lies. It's and if you tell people lots of lies and you refuse and you terrify them if they talk about it, you can achieve the social engineering that we're watching going on. And it's really quite frightening. And I come back to the fact that this was once the gay rights movement. What happened to the gay rights movement? It's about men who are attracted to men. It's about women who are attracted to women. It's a very simple thing. It's about sexual orientation. And all these other letters that have come afterwards are about completely separate things. We must separate them. We must separate them. The idea that there is some LGBTQIA+ community is another lie. It isn't true. There isn't. LGBT people are people who have a certain sexual orientation. That's it. We don't have anything else in common. That's it. It's just sexual orientation. And all these other letters have to do with a feeling of self and a feeling of identity. They've been stuck together, and it's making a complete mess of gay rights.
There's a couple of directions I want to go. One of them is And I'm going to totally butcher this line, but Sheila Jeffries has this great line in, I believe, the book Unpacking Queer Theory, where she talks about how queer theory was developed as a response to, reaction to, is the word she used, as a reaction to lesbian feminist politics, and that it's in opposition to lesbian feminist politics and is harmful to vulnerable populations, is her frame is this the way she says it, vulnerable populations of lesbians and gays. And it's interesting that, you know, the whole Q thing is completely different from LGB, and they've sort of parasitized off of it. That's one thing I wanted to just throw in for you to say anything you want about. And then the other thing that's very interesting is, I'm so glad you brought back up the whole gender nonconforming thing. And since this is on radio, people can't hear me putting air quotes around gender nonconforming, because it seemed two things about that. One of them is, the whole idea of gender conforming has never made any sense to me.
Well, I can inform you that I'm 100% masculine. I went online and I did one of those lizard quizzes, so I'm 100% masculine, according to this little quiz. Anyway, just thought I'd throw that in there.
So there was a friend wrote to me probably 10 years ago, and she said, okay, so I hear that you don't really believe in this whole trans thing, but what about a little boy who loves to dance and play with dolls? What do you do about him? And I responded,
seriously, what do you do about him? That was the question.
Well, that's close. This is 10 years ago.
Story.
So what I responded to her is, a little boy who loves to dance and play with dolls should be loved for being a little boy who loves to dance and play with dolls. And a little girl who loves to play football and work on bicycles and later on cars should be loved for being a little girl who loves to work on bicycles and play with cars. And in this case, the friend wrote back and said, oh my God, I understand. I get it. This whole thing is nonsense. But if I were to say this in public, of course, I'm a Nazi, bigot, hateful. And so I'm just throwing all that stuff out. So the two things I'm saying here, and you can respond to any of them, none of them, I don't care. One of them is just more about this whole gender nonconforming stuff. It doesn't make any sense to me that a little girl likes to play football and work on and climb trees, so that means we need to cut off her breasts. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I mean, that means she's a boy. Sorry, I'm just rambling. So say anything you want.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we agree with you 100%. One of our early gifts that we put on Twitter was the only way that we were allowed to communicate. We're still not allowed on any TV stations, radio stations, with the exception of a couple of channels very, very loyal to GB News and Talk Radio, because they talk to us, but not BBC or ITV or any of the major ones. Where, anyway, in terms of our communication, it was all via Twitter, and we had a GIF early on that said, the girl who likes football. Shit, sorry. Oh, sorry, viewers, listeners. A girl who
likes, this is America, you know.
A girl who likes, some people think a girl who likes football needs a double mastectomy. We think she needs football boots. And you know, you're so right. And I because this podcast is going to be in America, I'm going to tell this story, which I've told in the UK, and Bev gets fed up with it. But I think it's indicative. When I was at school, I don't know what class it was, but I was nine. I was in a mixed class of girls and boys, and every time the teacher, Mr. Higgins, used to take us out for sport, he would blow a whistle and say, "Boys and Catherine Harris over there," and point over one side, "girls over there." And off I went, and I was really good at football, really good at cricket, and I loved it. And now I know 100% some probably straight person who calls themselves queer because they dye their hair blue. Some straight person who thinks she's or he's helping me would come up and say, "Catherine, You know, you do realize that some people have a gender identity that's different from the sex they were assigned at birth. And I honestly, I would have jumped at this special attention. I was very lonely, very vulnerable. And this is utterly ridiculous, utterly ridiculous. They left me alone. I was just with the boys, nobody turned a hair. And then I went on to be a happy lesbian. I haven't had to have a double mastectomy. I haven't had to take testosterone. I've lived, you know, I'm 68. I've lived my whole life as a lesbian. Very, very happy in the United Kingdom until queer theory and gender identity theory told me that I was a bigot and a Nazi for saying that a man cannot have a penis and cannot be a lesbian.
You just said a man cannot. Okay.
What did I say? You did it the wrong way around.
Yeah, you did something slightly odd there, doesn't that?
But you see what I mean? The point about gender nonconformity is, as you said, why are we conforming at all? You know, why can't we be Boy George or Annie Lennox or David Bowie? Why can't we have fun?
Yeah, it's very odd. We're called biological essentialists, which is completely the opposite of what we are. It's as if we were trying to impose kind of the sexist roles that we've actually, both of us, fought against all our lives. I mean, it's just crazy.
But also, Sheila Jeffries is right about queer theory. And you know, this is so extraordinary, again, that it clothes itself in being progressive. And it is the opposite. And I think this is what, you know, if we can get any message across to anybody in the world, it is that the most progressive people are those who say, let every boy and every girl go through puberty. Let every girl and every boy be whatever they want, wear dresses, wear trousers, climb trees, do whatever they want and have fun, but do not take unnecessary steps with drugs and irreversible surgery, which is just, it's a nightmare scenario. And hopefully in 5 years, we'll look back and say, what the hell were we thinking of?
So let's be a bit optimistic here, because we sketched this with the scenario, what it was like in 2019 when we started. The climate, the landscape in the UK has changed dramatically since then. And I like to think that we have played a small role in that. It's maybe even a large or a medium-sized role. It's not clear, because, of course, it's not just LGB Alliance. We have a huge women's movement in the UK, which has been very powerful and very vocal for women's rights, and which intersect, of course, with the rights that of lesbians and gay men and bisexuals that we're talking about. But things have changed remarkably. And I was told 3 years ago by a very senior Labour advisor who had been an advisor to Jeremy Corbyn that there was no chance of stopping self-ID in the United Kingdom. We should forget that, but there will safeguards can be built in, but there's no chance of stopping it. Well, self-ID has been stopped by the Conservative government, which was one definite gain. The self-ID has been stopped in Scotland. It seems to have been stopped in any way by being blocked, which we also we have done a lot of campaigning to stop self-ID. And now, just this past week, the Labour Party, which had self-ID as its policy for many years, has dropped self-ID. So we believe if that can happen in the UK, it can happen in the United States as well. We're already seeing signs, really hopeful signs. The New York Times has shifted it. It still hasn't shifted maybe enough, but you do see now articles, really critical articles of pediatric transition in the New York Times. And I'm hopeful that that will spread and that it will become easier for self-appointed liberals, people in the Democratic Party, to speak out against the horror of pediatric transition and to stop thinking that it is progressive or that it is a civil rights struggle, which is the very furthest thing from the truth.
One thing I want to mention that has been a complete horror to me is that in the United States, we basically had an entire country celebrating the castration of a young gay boy on television.
Yeah. You're talking about Jazz Jennings.
Yeah. And I my hope is that, and then we're called the Nazis. My fervent hope is that in a few years, this will be looked back at as the atrocity that it is. I don't want to get too graphic about this, but like, A, when I was his age, I had not had an orgasm. And B, knowing what orgasms are, I would, in retrospect, I think want to do great harm to anybody who would deprive me of that for my entire life.
Yeah.
It is one of
the... They never talk about that. They never talk about that aspect of the loss of sexual function. Like, they don't talk about a lot of other aspects, incontinence and God knows what. But the loss of sexual function is a really... It's a horrific thing. And how can you expect young children to understand what that will mean for the rest of their lives? As you say, it is an atrocity, and we have to get that message across. And we have to make it possible. You have to break through the fear.
I totally agree with you, Derek. I think we talk about loss of sexual function. Maybe we should talk more about never have an orgasm. Or, you know, you have your breasts removed when you're 15. You know, what does that mean? It's not just about breastfeeding. It's about...
How old was Jazz Jennings when he first had, I mean, it was very young. He was like 10 or something, wasn't he?
I don't know how
old he was. Very young.
The
issue is that, I mean, I think the greatest strength that we have in Turf Island is that this is no longer a party issue. The women and the men, the gays, the lesbians, the bisexuals, the trans, all the people who are standing up against this do not belong to one political party. We have cross-party groups. We have people who have no party affiliation. In fact, we've got a lot of people who are politically homeless because they cannot vote for parties until they actually stand up and say, this is mad. And what we're beginning to see, I think, in the US, like certainly in Texas, and we hope in California, which has obviously gone to absolute extremities of, I'm afraid I would call it child abusive behavior. But you just need one or two people to start telling the truth, however difficult it is. And for as long as Rachel Levine is in the White House encouraging child transition, the Democrats have a massive problem.
Yeah.
I just hope that over time, in the same way as we've seen in the Labour Party, they've obviously had focus groups, they've looked at the evidence, they've seen that the move towards self-ID and with it encouraging children to believe you're born in the wrong body, etc. They've seen that is a vote loser. So I think what we have to hope that the vision of Rachel Levine on national television talking about what a great idea it is to give drugs to children, we have to hope that that will wake up a lot of voters.
He says that this is life-saving. Puberty blockers are life-saving. And praises them at every opportunity. And it's
somebody,
just
somebody.
And we're in that position, Assistant Secretary of Health. It's, you know, with speaking with the voice of authority on behalf
somebody has to get to President Biden and to Kamala Harris, because certainly in the UK, it's Sir Keir Starmer, the leader of our Labour Party, who thinks he's going to be the next Prime Minister, who realises that if he carries on promoting this, he's probably not going to win.
Now, we're not going to tell Americans what to do, are we, Catherine?
Oh, sorry. No, not in a million years. No. But, you know, we both are Americophiles. I've been across to the US 3 times. I bet you haven't, Derek.
And I've got lots of family, relatives in different parts of the state. So we're both we just follow American politics from day to day. We were just a bit crazy like that.
No, I agree with you on the Democratic Party needs to change, or they're gonna this will lose things for them. So we have just a couple of minutes left, and I'm gonna do something really unfair, which is like ask you three questions to answer in 2 minutes. So one of them is going to be, you're both old school lefties. I'm an old school lefty, but not quite as, a little bit younger than you, but not much. What happened to the left to go so crazy? Second is, can you tell people how to find out more about LGB Alliance? And three, can you close the interview? Sorry to do all that so quickly.
Well, the left has gone crazy before. The left rather likes the idea of purity. It was the left that embraced eugenics in the 1920s. So I don't think it's so unusual for the left to go crazy. And the amount of actual misogyny in the left is pretty striking. The Labour Party has never had, for instance, a woman leader and has resisted women's voices for years. So I'm going to say it's not that unusual.
More information on LGB Alliance, yay! Go to our website, lgballiance.org.uk. Come to our conference. We love Americans. It's on the 27th of October in London, and we always have our conference at the Queen Elizabeth II Conference Centre, which is directly opposite Westminster Abbey. Why? Because it's a fabulous venue. And secondly, it has wonderful security because it's right outside Parliament. My tip for anybody who's interested is to read the transcripts of our trial on our website, which make fascinating reading because they are hysterically funny. We have the witnesses from Mermaids, including a character from a Restoration comedy lookalike called John Nicholson MP, a buffoon of the most hilarious order who talks rubbish throughout the trial. We have Paul Roberts, who's the CEO of the LGBT Consortium, who also talks rubbish, as does Belinda Bell, the former chair of Mermaids.
You're
And of
running
course,
over.
three witnesses from LGB Alliance talk brilliantly throughout, especially me. So have a look at the transcript, and we love you all. We wish you all the best in America.
Okay, and I'm going to say one thing to finish. This transcript is so funny, actually, that an American filmmaker decided to make it into a play. Now we don't know whether so far it's only been performed as a stage reading. We hope that it will become a play, because the fact is that when the arguments are out there, when you do get talking about what gender identity means, and then it actually is quite amusing because they have no arguments at all. And what I would say to all listeners is, please, if you are afraid to speak out, just do speak out. You will gain more than you lose.
I know that I still have two more questions. Sorry.
Now that's cheating.
I know. One of them is we never talked about the trial. Can you do like a 30-second, 1-minute summary? And the other thing is I want for somehow for you both to end with there's I don't remember which suffragist, but there was a suffragist had that great line, courage calls to courage. And so if you can work that into your trial, so go. We've got like a minute.
Okay, well, a tax lawyer who really dislikes us thought, is there any way we can get rid of their charitable status, which is like a non-profit? We're a registered non-profit, a registered charity in 2021. And he thought, how can we try and get them off the register of charities? And he chose a youth trans organization, Mermaids, which promotes puberty blockers, and to try and challenge us and say that we should lose our charitable status because we were against them, basically. So the trial became trans youth transition against people who were against youth transition, and that is why it turned out to be amusing, because there are no sensible arguments in favor of youth transition. That's the best I can do, Kate. I don't know if you think that was a lousy summary.
I think the most important thing is we won.
Oh yes, we won.
Hands down, we were put through hell for 2 years. The whole point of it was to stop us getting on with our work to promote and protect LGB rights, and in particular to focus on children. But that's now over. We've won, They lost, so that was good. And the courage calls to courage everywhere is a quote from Millicent Fawcett, which we completely support. And there's a statue of her in opposite Parliament, in Parliament Square, where we often go and say hello. But the other phrase that we use from the suffragettes is from Emmeline Pankhurst, which is, of course, deeds, not words, which has always been what we have done since our first meeting. We are about deeds, not words. Judge us by what we do. And we find that our job is, despite all the all the difficulties from people who oppose us, our job is easy because we only tell the truth.
Well, thank you so much for all of that, and thank you for your work in the world. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guests today have been Kate Harris and Bev Jackson. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.